The water is wide.
You here?
To see you.
After a while, he said, Where's here?
He was lying flat, so couldn't have much in view but ceiling and the top third of Anna. In any case, his eyes looked unfocused. Hospital.
Another pause.
He said something like, Is it me that's here?
The words were slurred.
He added clearly enough,
It's not you. You look all right.
I am. You're here. And I'm here to see you.
This made him smile. The smile of an adult lying flat on his back resembles the smile of an infant, in that gravity works with it, not against it.
Can I be told, he said, or will the knowledge kill me?
If knowledge could kill you, you'd have been dead for years.
Am I sick?
Do you feel well? He turned his head away, the first bodily movement he had made.
I feel ill. The words were slurred. Full of drugs, some kind of drugs.
The head moved again, restless.
Don't like it, he said.
He looked straight at her now.
I don't feel well, he said. Anna, I'm cold. I feel cold.
Tears filled the eyes and ran down from them into the graying hair. This happens in cases of human suffering, when the sufferer is lying face up and is middle-aged. Anna said his name and took his hand. Her hand was somewhat smaller than his, several degrees warmer, and very similar in structure and texture. Even the shape of the nails was similar. She held his hand. He held her hand. After some time, his hand began to relax.
Kind drugs, he said.
The eyes were shut now. He spoke once more. He said,
Wait.
Anna said, I will. Then she thought he had spoken of a weight that lay upon him. She could see the weight in the way he breathed to sleep. It's the drugs, she said. He's asked every time if you could stop giving him the drugs. Could you decrease the dose? The doctor said chemotherapy and other words, some of which were the names of drugs ending in zil and ein. He says that he can't sleep, but he can't wake up either. I think he needs to sleep, and to wake up. The doctor said many other words. He said them in so rapid, distinct, and fluent a manner, and with such assurance, that Anna believed them all for at least 3 hours.
Is this a loony bin? Gideon inquired, with perfect clarity.
Anna knitted.
Thought wards.
Oh, it's all private rooms here. It's a nice private sort of place. Rest home. Polite. Expensive.
Senile. Incontinent. Can't talk. Anna? Stroke?
No, no. She put her knitting down on her knee. You got overtired.
Tumor?
No. You're sound as a bell. Only a little cracked. You got tired. You acted funny.
What'd I do? He asked, his eyes brightening.
Made an awful fool of yourself.
Did?
Well, you washed all the blackboards at the Institute with soap and water.
That all?
You said it was time to start all over. You made the dean fetch the soap and buckets. They both jolted softly with laughter at the same time. Never mind the rest. You had them all quite busy, believe me. They all understood now that his much-publicized New Year's Day letter to the Times, which he had defended with uncharacteristic vehemence, had been a symptom. This was a relief to many people, who had uncomfortably been thinking of the letter as a moral statement. Looking back, everyone at the Institute could now see that Gideon had not been himself for some months. Indeed, the change could be traced back 3 years to the death of his wife, Dorothea, of leukemia. He had borne his loss well, of course, but had he not remained somewhat withdrawn, increasingly withdrawn? Only no one had noticed it because he'd been so busy. He had ceased to take vacations at the family cabin up at the lake, and had done a good deal of public speaking in connection with the peace organization of which he was co-chairman. He had been working much too hard. It was all clear now. Unfortunately, it had not become clear until the evening in April when he began a public lecture on the question of ethics in science by gazing at the audience in silence for 35 seconds. Approx, one of the mathematical philosophers present in the audience, had begun to time the silence at the point when it became painful, though not yet unendurable. And then, in a slow, soft, rough voice, which no one who heard it could forget, announced, "The quantification of death is now the major problem facing theoretical physicists in the latter half of the Western Hemisphere." He had then closed his mouth and stood gazing at them. Hansen, who had introduced his talk and sat at the speaker's platform, was a large man and a quick-witted one. He had without much trouble induced Gideon to come backstage with him to one of the seminar rooms. It was there that Gideon had insisted that they wash all the blackboards perfectly clean. He hadn't become violent, though his behavior had been what Hansen termed extraordinarily willful. Later on, in private, Hansen wondered whether Gideon's behavior had not always been willful, in that it had always been self-directed, and whether he should not have used instead the word irrational. That would have been the expectable word. But its expectability led him to wonder if Gideon's behavior, as a theoretical physicist, had ever been rational, and in fact if his own behavior, as a theoretical physicist or otherwise, had ever been adequately describable by the term rational. He said nothing, however, of these speculations, and worked very hard for several weekends at building a rock garden at the side of his house. Though he offered no violence to others or himself, Gideon had attempted escape. At a certain moment, he appeared to understand suddenly that medical aid had been summoned. He acted with decision. He told the dean, Dr. Hansen, Dr. Mehta, and the student, Mr. Chu, all of whom were with him. Several other members of the audience or of the institute were busy keeping busybodies and reporters out. "You finish the blackboards in here, I'll do room 40," and taking up a bucket and a sponge, went rapidly across the hall into a vacant classroom, where Chu and Hansen followed him at once, preventing him from opening a window. The room was on the ground floor, and his intention was made clear by his saying, "Let me get out, please. Help me get out." Chu and Hansen were compelled to restrain his arms by force. He struggled briefly to free himself. Failing, he became silent and apparently thoughtful. Shortly before the medical personnel arrived, he suggested in a low voice to Chu, "If we sat down on the floor here, they might not see us." When the medical personnel entered the room and came close to him, he said loudly, "All right, have it your way," and at once began to yell wordlessly or scream. The graduate student, Chu, a brilliant young biophysicist, who hadn't had much experience of human suffering, let go of his arm and broke into tears. The medical personnel, having had perhaps excessive experience of human suffering, promptly administered a quick-acting sedative or tranquilizer by hypodermic. Within 35 seconds, approx, the patient fell silent and became tractable, accepting the straitjacket without resistance, and with only a slight expression, facial, not verbal, of bewilderment, or possibly curiosity. "I have to get out of here." "Oh, Gid, not yet. You need to rest. It's a decent place. They've eased up on the drugs. I can see the difference." "I have to get out, Anna."
"You're not well yet."
"I am not a patient. I am impatient. Help me get out, please."
"Why, Gid? What for?"
"They won't let me go where I have to go."
"Where do you have to go?"
mad. Dear Lynn, they continue to let me visit Gideon every afternoon from 5 to 6 because I'm his only relative, the widower's widowed sister, and I just sort of barge in. I don't think the doctor approves of my visits. I think he thinks I leave the patient disturbed, but he hasn't the authority to keep me out, I guess, until Gideon is committed. I guess he doesn't really have any authority in a private rest home like this, but he makes me feel guilty. I never did understand when to obey people. He's supposed to be the best man here for nervous breakdowns. He's been disapproving lately and says Gideon is deteriorating, ceasing to respond. But all he gives him to respond to is drugs. What is he supposed to say to them? He hasn't eaten for 4 days. He responds to me when nobody else is there, or anyhow, he talks, and I respond. He asked me about you kids yesterday. I told him about Kate's divorce. It made him sad. Everybody is divorcing everybody else, he said. I was sad, too, and I said, well, we didn't. You and Dorothea, me and Lewis. Death us did part. Which is preferable, I wonder. He said it comes out much the same. Fission fusion. The human race is one great nuclear family. I wondered if the doctor would think that's the way an insane person talks. Maybe he would think that's the way two insane people talk. Later on, Gideon told me what the weight is. It is all the people who are dying. A lot of them are children, little, hollow, empty children. Some of them are old people, very light, hollow, old men and women. They don't weigh much separately, but there are so many of them. The old people lie across his legs. The children are in a great heap on his chest, across his breastbone. It makes it hard for him to breathe. Today he only asked me to help him get out and go where he has to go. When he speaks of that, he cries. I always hated for him to cry when we were children. It made me cry, too, even when I was 13 or 14. He only cried for real griefs. The doctor says that what he has is an acute depression, and it should be cured with chemicals. But Gideon isn't depressed. I think what he has is grief. Why can't he be allowed to grieve? Would it destroy the rest of us, his grief? It's the people who don't grieve who are destroying us, it seems to me. Here's your clothes. You'll have to get up and get dressed, Gideon, if you want to come away with me. I didn't get permission. I just can't get through to that doctor. He wants to cure you. If you want to go, you'll have to get up and walk.
Shall I take up my bed?
Don't be silly.
Bible.
For God's sake, don't go religious now. If you do, I'll bring you right back here. Hurry up. Here's your pants.
Please, get off me just for a minute, he said to the dying children and old men and women.
Oh, how thin you are. Let me button that. All right. Can you manage?
Hang on.
No, hang on to me. You haven't been eating. You're dizzy.
Dizzy giddy.
Do shut up. Try to look ordinary.
We are ordinary.
They walked out of the room and down the hall arm in arm, an ordinary middle-aged couple. They walked past the old woman in the wheelchair nursing her doll, and past the room of young men who stared. They walked past the receptionist's desk. Anna smiled and said in a peculiar voice at the receptionist, "Going out for a walk in the garden." The receptionist smiled and said, "Lovely weather." They walked out onto the brick front path of the rest home and down it between lawns to the iron gate. They walked through the gate and turned left. Anna's car was parked halfway down the block under elm trees.
Oh, if I have a heart attack, it's all your fault.
Wait, I'm so shaky I can't get the key in. You all right?
Sure. Where are we going?
To the lake.
He went out with his sister doctor for a walk about half an hour ago.
A walk, my God, the doctor said. Where to?
I am Anna. I am Gideon. I am Gideana. I am sister's brother, brother's sister. I am Gideon who am dying, but it is your death I die, not mine. I am Anna who am not mad, but I am your brother who is mad. Take my hand, brother from the dark. Reich mir das Hand, mein Leben. Komm in mein Schloss mit mir.
Oh, but that castle I do not want to enter, brother mine. That is the castle I do not want to enter. It has a dark tower. Who do you think I am, child Roland? A Roland to your Oliver? No, look. We know this place. This is the old place where we were children. Let's dance here, on the lake shore, by the water. You be the tower, I will be the lake. You will dance in me, reflected. I will be full of you, of the wave-broken, shimmering stones. Lie lightly on me, tower, brother. See, if you lie lightly, we are one. But we have always been one, sister, brother. We have always danced alone. I am Gideon, who dances in your soul, and I am dying. I can't dance any longer. I'm borne down, borne down, borne down. I cannot lie. I cannot dance. All the reflections are dissolved. I cannot dance. I cannot breathe. They lie on me. They lie in me. How can the starving be so heavy, Anna? Gideon, is it our fault? It can't be your fault. You never harmed a living soul. But I am the fault, you know. The fault in my soul and yours. The fault itself. The line on which the ground moves. So the earthquake comes, and the people die, the little puzzled children and the young men with guns, and the women pausing, shopping bag in hand, in the dissolving supermarket, and the old people who crouch down and reach out with wrinkled fingers to the faltering earth. I have betrayed them all. I didn't give them enough food to eat. How could you have? You're not God. Oh, yes, I am. We are.
We are?
Yes, we are. Indeed, we are. If I weren't God, how should I be dying now? God is what dies. God is bereavement. We all die for each other.
If I am God, I am the woman God, and I shall be reborn. Out of my own body, I shall bear my birth.
Surely you will, but only if I die, and I am you. Or do you deny me at the grave's edge after 50 years?
No, no, no. I don't deny you, though I've often wanted to. But that's not a grave's edge, my young darkness, my terror, my little brother soul. It's only a lake shore, see?
There is no other shore.
There must be.
No. All seas have only one shore. How could they have more? Well, there's only one way to find out. I'm cold. It's cold. The water's cold.
Look, there they are. So many of them, so many. The children float because they're hollow, swollen up with air. The older people swim for a while. Look how that old man holds a clod of earth in his hand, the piece of the world he held to when the earthquake came. A little island, not quite big enough. Look how she holds her baby up above the water. I must help her. I must go to her. If I touch one, they will take hold of me. They will clutch me with the grip of the drowning and drag me down with them. I'm not that good a swimmer. If I touch them, I'll drown. Look there. I know that face. Isn't that Hansen? He's holding on to a rock, poor soul. A plank would serve him better. There's Kate. There's Kate's ex-husband. And there's Lynn. Lynn's a good swimmer, always was. I'm not worried about Lynn. But Kate's in trouble. She needs help. Kate! Don't wear yourself out, honey. Don't kick so hard. The water's very wide. Save your strength. Swim slowly, sweetheart. Kate, my child. There's young Chu. And look there. There's the doctor, in right over his head. And the receptionist. And the old woman with the doll. But there are so many more. So many. If I reach out my hand to one, 100 will reach for it. 1,000, 1,000 million, and pull me down and drown me. I can't save one child, one single child. I can't save myself. Then let it be so. Take my hand, child, stranger in the darkness, in the deep waters. Take my hand. Swim with me while we can. Let us be drowned together. For it's certain we shall not be saved alone. It's silent out here in the deep waters. I can't see the faces anymore. Dorothea, there's someone following us. Don't look back.
I'm not Lot's wife, Lewis. I'm Gideon's wife. I can look back and still not turn to salt. Besides, my blood was never salt enough. It's you who shouldn't look back. Do you take me for Orpheus? I was a good pianist, but not that good. But I admit, it scares me to look back. I don't really want to. I just did. There's two of them, a woman and a man. I was afraid of that.
Do you think it's them?
Who else would follow us?
Yes, it's them. Our husband and our wife.
Go back! Go back! This is no place for you.
Well, this is the place for everyone, Dorothea.
Yes, but not yet. Not yet.
Oh, Gideon, go back.
He doesn't hear me. I can't speak clearly anymore. Lewis, you call to them.
Go back! Don't follow us!
They can't hear us, Dorothea. Look how they come, as if the sand were water. Don't they know there's no water here?
I don't know what they know, Lewis. I have forgotten.
Gideon, oh Gideon, take my hand.
Anna, take my hand.
Can they hear us? Can they touch us?
I don't know. I've forgotten.
It's cold. I'm cold. It's too deep, too far to go. I have reached out my hand, and reached out my hand into the darkness, but I couldn't tell what good it did. If I held up some child for a while, or if some shadow hand reached back to me, I don't know. I can't tell the way. Back on the dry land, they were right. They told me not to grieve. They told me not to look. They told me to forget. They told me to eat my lunch and take my pills that end in zil and ein. And they were right. They told me to be quiet, not to shout, not to cry out aloud. Be quiet now, be good. And they were right. What's the good in shouting? What's the good in shouting, help me, help, I'm drowning, when all the rest of them are drowning too? I heard them crying, help me, please. But now I hear nothing. I hear the sound of the deep waters only. Oh, take my hand, my love. I'm cold, cold, cold. The water is wide. I cannot get over. And neither have I wings to fly. Give me a boat that will carry two, and both shall row, my love and I. There is, oh, there is another shore. Look at the light of morning on the rocks, the light on the shores of morning. I am light. The weight's gone. I am light.
But it is the same shore, Gideana.
Then we have come home. We rode all night in darkness in the cold, and we came home. The home where we have never been before. The home we never left. Take my hand and step ashore with me, my sister life, my brother death. Look, it is the beginning place. Here we begin. Here by the flood that parts us.